Stephen Kovacevic is one of the most revered artists of his generation, with an international career spanning more than six decades. He is celebrated for his profound interpretations of Beethoven, Schubert, Brahms, and beyond. In fact, those brilliant composers will be his focus here in Toronto this weekend, October 5th at Kerner Hall. Stephen was born in Los Angeles and made a remarkable debut at the age of 11 in California. Over the decades, he's built a career defined by intellectual rigor, emotional depth, and a distinctive sound that balances clarity with poetry. In addition to his solo recitals, chamber and orchestral collaborations with many of the world's leading artists, he's also an admired conductor. His recordings remain benchmarks in the classical catalog. The Washington Post saying, quote, "A musician who is totally immersed in his craft, his interpretations are like no one else's and always come straight from the heart. Musical messages of wisdom, peace, resignation, and hope." Stephen Kovacevic is at Kerner Hall, 3 p.m. on October 5th, in recital, tickets at rcmusic.com, and we are so glad to have him on the line from London. Stephen, welcome.
Thank you.
We're looking forward to talking about this concert and where you are right now and your place in classical music history, but we'll start by asking you about your relationship with Toronto, because I know you've been here in the past. Tell us about your history with this city.
Toronto is special to me because the best five-hour conversation I ever had was with Gould.
Oh, wow.
No overcoat, no gloves, just completely normal. We talked like maniacs, having never met. I'll never forget that afternoon.
That is so incredible. What a great story. And like you say, gloves off, so to speak. And was it just purely intellectual conversation about music, or did you wander
and
around?
Life,
yeah.
And life and... We met 2 years later afterwards, and that was normal conversation between, you know, people, normal.
Yeah.
But the first one, he must have felt the same thing because he canceled his appointments to drive me to the airport so that we could talk to the last second. I remember some of the things we talked about, also some of the things which I won't say them, but they reveal things I didn't know about his aesthetic. To cut to the end of the story, it turns out that his composer he loved above all was Richard Strauss. Can you believe it?
Wow, that does seem hard to believe.
I know, because yeah. I thought, you know, a man of the people, the Goldberg, and all ethically correct, forget it.
Yeah, that's almost shocking.
It was real.
What a great story. And I just love that idea. It's something you read about in books, right? Where artists get talking and then suddenly just put away whatever they're doing so that they can keep talking. And I think that's a really beautiful experience.
Yes, I'll never forget that afternoon.
But I have to ask about Hampstead. I just visited for the first time. I went to Hampstead Heath and had a lovely hike there and did some shopping. It must have been a nice place for you to live.
It is. It's full of trees. That's what's beautiful about it.
Yeah. Why did it work for you to settle there?
I moved here to this flat about 30 years ago, and I have a flat that is quite high, and luckily because of the construction of the house, which is 1850 and very solid, the neighbors hardly hear me, so I don't bother people with practice.
Right. What does practice look like these days at this point in your life?
I start around 11 and then on and off till around 5, something like that.
Amazing. So that's basically a work day. It was something that Yo-Yo Ma said to us when he was here one time, talking about going back over and over again to the same material. In other words, for him, it was the Bach cello suites in his case. But I'm wondering about that for you, about returning to material that certainly is very familiar. But tell me about growing with that music.
Well, it does change all by itself. I mean, not often drastically, but I'm surprised at just reworking masterpieces. Different aspects of the composition suddenly appear. What surprises me is that it's spontaneous. I mean, I don't go starting to practice thinking to do something new. Mm. But when you start something that you played a lot but haven't played recently, it's rusty at the beginning. In the process of bringing it back, you find that things have changed, and I can't explain it, and it's pleasant, and I'm glad it happens like that.
We talked about, you know, your incredible life of collaboration as a conductor, certainly as a performer in recital, and then there's the recordings. I mean, do you think about legacy at this stage in your life, what you've added to the classical music catalog?
I suppose I think I have a good conscience. I've more or less done what I was gifted with. I think that's important, and I'm lucky that I feel that way, because if you waste something, or, I mean, I haven't always played well, and et cetera, but that's not through anything rather than circumstances, but I've worked and prepared and been dedicated, and I think that is satisfying. I'm glad for certain recordings, Brahms Second with Colin Davis, Bartok II with Colin,
nice.
The last Beethoven cello sonata with Jacqueline Dupre,
yeah.
Things like that I'm proud of, and I'm still pleased when I hear them.
That's a big record when you think about performing with Jacqueline Dupre. I mean, unbelievable.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
We were kids.
Yeah.
I mean, I was 25 and she was 18. And she's one of the few musicians ever that I worked with who understood Beethoven without having a dark night of the soul or any. She wasn't religious. It was just in her. She understood. In fact, I would probably say she's the only musician I've worked with who I feel understood late Beethoven.
Wow, that's fascinating. If you are just joining us, pianist Stephen Kovacevic is with us on the line from Hampstead in London. He is at Kerner Hall, 3 p.m. on Sunday, October 5th, in recital with Brahms, Beethoven, and Schubert. Tickets at rcmusic.com. And so, Stephen, this is material that you know really inside and out, but I'd be interested to get your sense of each composer. And it looks like you're starting your program with Brahms, a personal favorite of mine. And tell me what this man means to you.
Well, he means more and more. It's
yeah.
funny. By the way, I'm playing, I won't say which piece, but one of the pieces I'm playing in Toronto has a section which is so beautiful, but so innic, so inside, unbearably beautiful. By the way, in terms of PC, it's also very interesting. There's a letter that Brahms, you can now see, about 1895 and 1896, he fell in love with the American Steinway. And not only did he say it was wonderful for his big pieces, he wrote that he starts to think it's even better for the pieces he wrote before he had ever encountered it.
Yeah.
I say this to confront the politically correct brigade that you can only use, you know, limited sound piano, and that authenticity is so specific defined. It isn't. And just luckily, we have Brahms. I've played American Steinways of 1896. They resemble today very, very much. And so I know that Rubinstein, of course, he loved all Chopin, but he admitted that Brahms, more and more, he loved it. And I would be in that category, too. The opening of the D minor, of which you're only sitting waiting to come in, is one of the greatest things in music.
I was fascinated. I went to Vienna a couple of years ago, and I went to the little museum of Johann Strauss Jr. and saw a picture of him with Brahms. And I just thought, these are odd bedfellows if I've ever seen two.
Yes. Brahms actually admired Johann Strauss.
Yeah.
He thought the waltzes were beautiful, and they are.
Let's turn to the Beethoven, the piano sonata number 31. Are we considering this one of the darker periods of Beethoven's life?
I think it's probably the darkest of all well, certainly it has the darkest passage in all of Beethoven's piano writing. The aria, which at first is presented in a normal way, and then he turns it upside down when it comes back again. And he sort of implies in his instructions a person out of breath on their last gap. And he notates, 30-second rests, which are, absurd, you know. The point is that it's a person on his last legs. And I think it's an amazing passage, and that passage really is different every time you play it. In Beethoven's case, he pulls himself out, and the sonata ends triumphantly, but I think it's the darkest passage in all of Beethoven's piano music.
And then to Schubert and his final sonata.
Yeah.
I don't think it was published until maybe later, until after he was gone. And is there a story to tell with these pieces, the way you've programmed this?
Well, not consciously, but now that you ask me, I can see a link. Not all the Brahms pieces are dark, but there is something dark there. The Schubert, well, the slow movement is out of this world. It's quite, but it doesn't need me to say it.
Right. I know you're a master interpreter, and I know there's a lot of people here in Toronto who are really excited to see you in performance with Brahms and Beethoven and Schubert, and it's just been great to get some of your insight here this afternoon. Pianist Stephen Kovacevic, we really appreciate you taking some time here, and we're looking forward to seeing you in Toronto. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Stephen is at Kerner Hall, 3 p.m. on Sunday, October 5th, in recital with Brahms, Beethoven, and Schubert. Tickets at rcmusic.com. Let's listen to a little more.